Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 Euro pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
U.S. President Donald Trump's bold executive order on homelessness is a no-nonsense plan to clear America's streets of encampments, drugs, and disorder. With cities like Toronto and Vancouver drowning in the same chaos, it's time for Canada to follow suit. The activists will scream, but their compassion has failed us. Skyrocketing overdoses and tent cities prove it. This is a common-sense call to reinstitutionalize the mentally ill, mandate treatment, and restore order. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Friday, August the 8th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta, non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
Stop repeating, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone.
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
Welcome to The Richard Serrett Show. Grab a coffee, settle in, and let's talk straight. The streets of our cities here in Canada, down in the States, are a mess. You've seen it, I've seen it. Tents sprawled across sidewalks, needles littering parks, and a pervasive sense of disorder that makes you think twice about walking downtown after dark. It's not just an eyesore. It's a tragedy. And for too long, we've let the bleeding hearts and ivory tower sociologists tell us that the answer is to coddle the chaos, to throw money at it, to call it compassion while our communities crumble. Well, President Donald Trump recently signed an executive order that says enough is enough. And I'm here to tell you, he's right. It's time to stop pretending the status quo is working. It's time to face the hard truth about homelessness, mental illness, and drug addiction, and do something about it. Let's break down this executive order titled Ending Crime and Disorder on America's Streets. It was signed back on July 24th. It's a bold move, no question. The order starts with a stark reality. 274,224 people were living on the streets in the U.S. on a single night last year, the highest number ever recorded. The majority, according to the study, are grappling with drug addiction, mental illness, or both. Nearly two-thirds of the homeless admit to regular use of hard drugs like meth, cocaine, or opioids. An equal number report mental health struggles. The order argues that decades of federal and state programs costing tens of billions of dollars have failed because they've ignored these root causes. Instead of enabling vagrancy, Trump's plan redirects resources to enforce laws against open drug use, urban camping, loitering, and squatting. It prioritizes funding for cities that crack down on these issues and pushes for civil commitment. That means involuntary treatment for those who are a danger to themselves or others, or who simply can't survive on the streets. It also ends support for Housing First, policies and so-called harm reduction programs, like safe injection sites that the administration says just perpetuate the problem. Now, let's be clear, this isn't about rounding up the downtrodden for the sake of optics. It's about recognizing that leaving people to rot in tent cities isn't compassion. It's cruelty. The order tasks the Attorney General to challenge judicial precedents that block civil commitment or involuntary treatment, to provide grants and guidance to states for flexible treatment standards, and to ensure federal funds don't prop up programs that enable drug use. It demands accountability from homelessness programs, insisting they focus on treatment, recovery, and self-sufficiency. It even takes steps to protect vulnerable populations, like ensuring sex offenders aren't housed with children in shelters. This is a comprehensive pivot, a rejection of the failed dogma that's turned our cities into open-air asylums. Now, of course, the naysayers are already screaming. The National Homelessness Law Center calls it terrifying, claiming it criminalizes poverty and disability. Activists like Jesse Rabinowitz wails that it's a broadside threat to the homeless and that it'll lead to detention camps and strip away rights. Margaret Sullivan, some Harvard academic, says it's vague and risks civil rights violations. They clutch their pearls over forced treatment, calling it unethical, ineffective, even illegal. They love their buzzwords, don't they? Housing first, harm reduction, systemic failures. But let's cut through the noise. These critics, these sociologists, activists, poverty pimps, are part of the problem. As Upton Sinclair so brilliantly put it, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it. These folks have built careers on perpetuating this crisis. Their grants, their NGOs, their tenured positions, they all depend on the problem persisting. If homelessness were solved, they'd be out of a job. Let's debunk their criticisms with some common sense, shall we? First, they say this order criminalizes homelessness. Utter nonsense. It targets disorder, open drug use, encampments that turn public spaces into no-go zones, and untreated mental illness that endangers everyone. It's not about punishing poverty, it's about restoring order, so regular folks, hey, remember regular folks, can walk their streets without fear. Second, they cry that forced treatment doesn't work. Really? Because the status quo, letting people spiral into addiction and psychosis on the sidewalk, is working so well? In fact, studies like those from the CDC show harm reduction programs don't solve addiction. They often enable it. Meanwhile, involuntary commitment, when done right, has a track record of stabilizing severe cases. Look at the data. Nearly two-thirds of the homeless are using hard drugs or battling mental illness. You don't fix that by handing out clean needles or a tent. You get them into treatment, whether they're ready to admit they need it or not. Third, they claim there's no capacity for this. Hospitals are full, beds are scarce. Fair point. But that's not an argument against the policy. It's an argument for building more facilities. And Trump's order redirects funds to prioritize treatment-focused programs. If states need more beds, let's invest in them, not throw up our hands and call it impossible. And this housing-first mantra they cling to, it sounds nice. Give everyone a home, then treat them. It's a fantasy. The real driver of homelessness is often economic, sky-high rents, stagnant wages. But for those with addiction or mental illness, housing alone doesn't cut it. You can't treat schizophrenia or opioid withdrawal in a studio apartment without professional intervention. Housing first has been the default for 20 years, and homelessness is up 18% since last year. It's not working. Now let's bring this home to Canada. From Vancouver to Toronto, our cities are mirror images of America's urban decay. Granville Street is a gauntlet of tents and overdoses. Toronto's Yonge Dundas Square, once a vibrant hub, now feels like a war zone. Calgary, Edmonton, Montreal, pick a city, you'll find the same story. Encampments, open drug use, and a growing sense that we've lost control. We've tried it the activists' way. We've poured billions into shelters, outreach programs, and safe supply experiments. What's the result? Overdose deaths are climbing. BC alone saw over 2,500 deaths in 2023. Homelessness is surging. Toronto's shelter system is at 97% capacity. The experiment has failed. It's not compassionate to let people die on the streets, high in fentanyl, or screaming at shadows because their schizophrenia is untreated. Compassion isn't enabling, it's intervening. We need to reinstitutionalize the severely mentally ill. We need mandatory drug treatment for those who can't break free on their own. And yes, we need to clear the encampments. Not because we hate the homeless, but because public spaces belong to everyone, not just those who've been abandoned by a broken system. Trump's order is a blueprint. It says, enforce the law, prioritize treatment, and stop pretending that enabling addiction or ignoring mental illness is a personality quirk that we have to tolerate. Canada needs to follow suit. Our leaders, Mark Carney, the NDP, the municipal do-gooders, have been seduced by the same tired ideology that's failed in the States. They'll tell you we need more affordable housing or community-based care. But housing doesn't cure psychosis, and community care doesn't work when someone's too far gone to accept it. We need a federal policy that mirrors Trump's. Fund treatment centers, not injection sites. Expand mental health courts and drug courts. Give cities the tools to enforce anti-camping laws and get people off the street and into care. And yes, we need to talk about civil commitment. Mandatory treatment. It's not a dirty word. It's a lifeline for those who've lost the ability to save themselves. The critics will howl, just like they've been howling in the United States. They'll call it cruel, authoritarian, or a violation of rights. What about the rights of the shopkeeper whose store is looted, the mother who can't take her kids to the park, the taxpayer who funds this chaos while watching their city decay? The homeless themselves, trapped in a cycle of despair, deserve better than platitudes. We've tried it their way, and our cities are proof it's a disaster. Trump's order isn't perfect, but it's a start. A recognition that public safety and human dignity demand action, not excuses. Canada, it's time to wake up. We need to take back our streets, not with cruelty, but with resolve. Because real compassion doesn't leave people to die in the cold. It gives them a chance to live.
Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knete ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Barra ist der irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 GB für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd. Barra, deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
News not in the news.
In Nova Scotia, the great outdoors is now enemy territory, and your fishing rod just might land you a $25,000 fine. Picture this. Nova Scotia, with its windswept coasts and pine-draped trails, a place where Canadians go to escape the urban grind and reconnect with nature. But Premier Tim Houston has other ideas. He's declared an emergency that bans, get this, hiking, fishing, and camping unless it's in a government-sanctioned campground. Step onto your own private property to cast a line? That'll be $25,000, please. And to make sure everyone plays along, they've set up a snitch line so your neighbors can rat you out for daring to enjoy a walk in the woods. The excuse? Wildfire prevention. Yet, the province's own natural resources minister admits the fires this season, about 100 of them, have been small and quickly contained. No raging infernos, no apocalyptic threats. Just a blanket ban on common sense and a hotline to foster distrust among citizens. Here we go again, folks. The same tired playbook from the COVID era. Manufacture a crisis, crank up the fear, and strip away freedoms faster than you can say bureaucratic overreach. This isn't about wildfires. It's about control. Nova Scotia's government is treating its citizens like children who can't be trusted to walk a trail without torching the province. A $25,000 fine for fishing? Are they worried the trout are packing lighters? This is the kind of heavy-handed governance that thrives on paranoia, not reason. And that snitch line? It's straight out of a dystopian novel. Neighbors spying on neighbors, not for public safety, but to enforce a petty edict that punishes people for living their lives. The deeper issue here is philosophical. When did we decide that governments get to dictate how we enjoy our own land, our own summers, our own freedoms? This is the globalist mindset at work. Centralized control, distrust of the individual, and a fetish for surveillance. Houston's proactive measures aren't proactive. They're preemptive strikes against liberty. The liberals love this game. Wrap their power grabs in the language of safety, and suddenly you're a villain for wanting to teach your kid how to cast a line. Nova Scotians deserve better. They deserve a government that respects their intelligence, not one that treats them like potential arsonists. Let's call this what it is: lunacy, masquerading as leadership. While carjackers roam free and anti-Semitic mobs march through Toronto, the police are busy shopping for tools to monitor your social media posts. That's right. The Toronto Police Service has a new mission, and it's not about stopping the carjackings that have residents double-locking their doors or confronting the pro-Hamas agitators intimidating Jewish neighborhoods. No, their latest priority is a shiny new social media surveillance tool. According to a request for information posted on Merck's, they're hunting for software to track, quote, narratives that may impact operational effectiveness, officer safety, or public perception. In plain English, they want to know what you're saying about them online. This is the same police force that suggested leaving your car keys by the door to make life easier for thieves and has turned a blind eye to open intimidation under the guise of protest. Instead of addressing the crime wave or the rising tide of anti-Semitism, they're focused on policing your opinions and managing their PR. Oh, Toronto, what a circus. Your police can't be bothered to tackle the real threats. Carjackers turning your driveway into a chop shop or mobs chanting hate in the streets. But they've got all the time in the world to snoop on your ex-posts. This is the woke mindset in action. Ignore the chaos in the real world, but heaven forbid someone calls out your incompetence online. The Toronto Police Service isn't just failing at its core mission. It's actively choosing to prioritize its own ego over public safety. This surveillance tool isn't about catching criminals. It's about catching criticism. It's about silencing the voices of fed-up citizens who are tired of being told to surrender their car keys to thieves or to just accept intimidation as free speech. This move reeks of the Liberal establishment's obsession with control. They don't want to solve problems. They want to manage narratives. It's the same impulse that drives censorship laws and misinformation crackdowns. The irony is galling. A police force that can't protect Jewish communities from harassment is now investing in deep analytics to monitor public sentiment. Here's a thought. Maybe if they did their jobs, the public sentiment wouldn't need monitoring. This is what happens when you let globalist priorities, image over substance, control over freedom, seep into institutions meant to serve the public. The Toronto Police Services isn't just out of touch. It's actively working against the people it's supposed to protect. Shame on them.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Pierre Poilievre is throwing down the gauntlet with a bold plan to unshackle Canada's economy from liberal red tape, and he's daring Prime Minister Mark Carney to act. Poilievre has unveiled the Canadian Sovereignty Act, a legislative battering ram aimed at dismantling the liberal policies choking Canada's economic potential. Announced in Calgary, the bill targets what Poilievre calls growth-blocking laws, like Bill C-69, that's the No New Pipelines Act, Bill C-48, the oil tanker moratorium, and the industrial carbon tax. It also scraps oil and gas caps, electric vehicle mandates, and plastic bans, while fast-tracking natural resource projects. Polyev's plan includes tax breaks for reinvesting in Canada, bonuses for provinces that open their markets, and protections to keep Canadian innovations from being sold off to foreign buyers. He's called on Carney to greenlight at least one LNG project in a road to Ontario's Ring of Fire by next March, challenging Carney to match his election rhetoric with action. Polyev's message is clear. Canada's sovereignty and prosperity depend on cutting the bureaucratic chains and letting builders build. Finally, a glimmer of hope in the swamp of liberal stagnation. Polyev's Canadian Sovereignty Act is a middle finger to the globalist agenda that's been strangling Canada's economy for years. Let's not kid ourselves. Bills C-69 and C-48 aren't about the environment. They're about kneeling to the altar of woke ideology and international interests that want Canada to stay a resource-rich doormat. Polyev's plan is a call to arms for every Canadian who's sick of seeing our potential squandered, our oil left in the ground, our innovations sold to the highest bidder, our workers taxed into oblivion. This is about reclaiming our economic independence, rewarding those who build, and telling the world that Canada isn't just open for business. It's ready to dominate. But here's the rub. The Liberals, under Mark Carney's slick globalist veneer, will fight this tooth and nail. They'll call it reckless. They'll call it dangerous. They'll trot out their tired talking points about climate and fairness. But what's fair about a system that punishes Canadian ingenuity and leaves us dependent on foreign tech and energy? This bill is a test of whether Carney's think bigger, act bigger rhetoric was just election hot air or a real commitment to Canada's future. My bet? He'll dodge, deflect, and delay. Because that's what Liberals do when faced with actual leadership. Polyev's act is a chance to break free from the woke, anti-growth dogma that's been holding us back. It's time to put Canada first, shovels on the ground, pipelines in the works, and prosperity in our sights. While Canadians struggle, Prime Minister Mark Carney's former company, Brookfield Asset Management, is raking in billions. And guess who's still holding the purse strings? Brookfield Asset Management Limited, the financial juggernaut once chaired by Prime Minister Mark Carney, is swimming in cash, reporting a second quarter profit of US $620 million, up from $495 million last year. With over $55 billion in global assets, Brookfield's riding high on what its president calls decarbonization and digitalization. Sound familiar? It should. Those are the same buzzwords Carney's been peddling as PM. But here's the kicker. Carney still holds $6.8 million in Brookfield stock options, tucked away in a so-called blind trust. Federal ethics disclosures reveal he owns 103 assets that could pose conflicts of interest, a record for a sitting PM. During the election, Carney dodged questions about his holdings, claiming he owned nothing but cash and real estate. Yet companies linked to Brookfield, like Enercare, which profits from Carney's $1 billion heat pump subsidy pledge, and North River Midstream, lobbying for faster resource approvals, have been cozying up to the PM's office. Conservative leader Pierre Polyev and MP Michael Barrett are sounding the alarm, demanding Carney sell his assets and face a lobbying investigation. Well, 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 isn't it convenient? Mark Carney's old pals at Brookfield are cashing in while he's running the country. This isn't just a conflict of interest, it's a neon-lit scandal that screams globalist cronyism. Carney's got $6.8 million in stock options, sitting in a blind trust that's about as blind as a hawk. And don't give me that he stepped down as chair nonsense. Those ties don't vanish just because you swap a boardroom for the Prime Minister's office. Brookfield's raking in profits from the very policies Carney's pushing, like heat pump subsidies that fatten up their subsidiary, Enercare, and resource deregulation that benefits their oil and gas ventures. Coincidence? Please. This is the liberal elite playbook. Talk a big game about decarbonization and fairness while funneling taxpayer dollars to your corporate buddies. Carney's 103 potential conflicts of interest aren't just a red flag. They're a five-alarm fire. He lied to Canadians during the election, claiming he had no assets to disclose. And now we're supposed to believe his blind trust keeps him impartial? Give me a break. This is the same globalist who spent his career hobnobbing with Davos elites, and now he's got his hands on Canada's levers of power, steering us toward policies that suspiciously align with Brookfield's bottom line. Polyev's right to call him out, and Barrett's lobbying investigation demand is long overdue. Carney's not governing for Canadians, he's governing for his portfolio. This is what happens when you let a globalist fox guard the national henhouse. Our sovereignty, our resources, our future get sold out to the highest bidder. Carney needs to sell his assets, come clean, or get out. Canada deserves a leader, not a corporate puppet. I'm Richard Serrett. This is The Richard Serrett Show, and thanks for listening. I'll speak with you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.